Okay, I apologize. What we're trying to give you, let you at least think about, and we don't know this for sure because we'll have to research it. But if somebody, in response to Andrew Jackson's pulling the money out, if a bank threatens to cause a depression, and you know they did, how do you think causing a depression would make it likely that the bank would be rechartered? Okay. All right, let me I'm just put it out to you like this. It could be that typically when banks want to have something and they threaten a depression, then the president who's in charge of making the policy to take the money out of the banks can be blamed for throwing the nation into joblessness, lack of resources, etc. And then the person who's running against him can run against him easily, more easily, by saying this person caused the nation to be in depression. You see that?
Yes.
So just want you to understand how that kind of works. It doesn't mean that they automatically will win. Sometimes that person can fight it off. But just know that the banks causing a depression will make the president unpopular because people very often don't have a long-range vision. They just have a short-range vision. And if they can't get new iPods, they say, oh, the world's coming to an end, and we got to get that president out and get a president where I can have my stuff right now. Never mind that they may be missing something down the road. But okay. All right. Now, in this section, Allende, what did you learn about Abraham Lincoln, the Civil War, and the money?
Okay, the main point, for me was Abraham Lincoln basically was trying to finance a war. He hired one of his longtime friends, Colonel Dick Taylor, and his solution to the financing of the war was that he could print out, $460 million dollars worth of bills.
Okay. What made those bills valuable as opposed to being worthless? Anybody? I didn't ask how were they distinguished from the others. I said what made them valuable. Anybody can answer the question. And great. What does that mean? You're right on the money. Full legal tender. What does full legal tender mean? By law, it means that you have to accept it as currency within the particular country. Okay. To pay for debts. That currency is backed by the government. So if you are a proprietor, you have to accept that money. If you are in the United States and you're doing business, you have to accept the dollar if somebody wants to pay you in dollars, because that's full legal, that's legal tender. Now, if you go to Jamaica, you don't have to accept, if the deal is in Jamaica, you don't have to accept the U.S. dollar if you don't want to. You may want to, but you may not. If you go to Europe, you may not want to be paid. If you go to China, you may not want to be paid in dollars. But within the country where it's the government decrees that this is full legal tender, then you have to accept it as the official currency of the government and accept it for debts, to pay off any debts. And the government stands behind it. Y'all got that? You'll see that again. Full legal tender. Make sure you put that in the text chat so you know what that is. All right? Now, let's trace the banks. Okay? All what you said so far is absolutely correct. Let's trace the banks. With the central bank killed off, fractional reserve banking moved like a virus through numerous state-chartered banks, instead causing the instability this form of economics thrives on. Sikili, did you watch the video Money as Debt?
Yes, I did watch it.
So, using what you learned there, what do they mean by fractional reserve banking? And if you can, and if you don't know and you want to ask for a lifeline, that's okay too. Just ask a fellow classmate to give you a lifeline. But you're welcome to look through your notes for a sec. While she's looking through her notes, then a question to you, Allende. What does Otto von Bismarck have to do with the Civil War? And Nima, to you, was Europe still trying to control America, and if so, how? All right, back to you. Back to you, Sikili. What you got?
Okay. Isn't it the amount of, how much real gold you have to have? How many real bars of gold you have to have compared to how many ones you're just making up?
You're in the right ballpark. You're in the right ballpark. We're going to get a little more specific than that. Help her out. Anybody? No, this is about the comment of, with the central bank killed off, fractional reserve banking moved like a virus through numerous state-chartered banks, instead causing the instability this form of economics thrives on. What is fractional reserve banking?
Isn't it when, the banks own, a fraction of, deposits?
Very good. Doesn't matter whether it's gold or not gold. Okay, you only keep a fraction. So that means we have $1 million in reserve cash, but we loan how much? Given what you learned from money as debt, how much can we loan based on that $1 million? Very good. Yes, Akili, you may. Thanks for asking. $9 million. Okay, so that's what they mean by, with the central bank killed off, that fractional reserve banking started in many of the state chartered banks. Okay. Then the next line, when people lose their homes, someone else wins them for a fraction of their wealth. Depression is good news to the lender. But war causes even more debt and dependency than anything else. So if the money changers couldn't have their central bank with a license to print money, a war would have to be. Imagine that. So this author is trying to make a connection between... They've already made a connection between a causal connection, the key word being cause, the root word being cause, a causal connection between bankers and depression. Now, this person is suggesting that there is a causal connection between banksters and war. What do you think about that? Yeah, banksters or the banks, the lenders. Sometimes they're the investors, so behind the banks. So that's why I say banksters. So the banksters or the banks. That's what, don't you see? That's what he's suggesting here. What do you think about that? Great, let's make that plain. You remember last class or two when I asked you the price of your houses and we talked about the depression, and if we were using the economic depression of the 1930s, the numbers would be 25% drop. And Nima, I think you said your $250,000 house would be valued at $187,000. Hello, Mama Amani Reynas. How are you doing?
Great, Mama. How are you?
I'm good. I'm missing my brothers.
Which one?
I'm missing Kanata and Kamal. I hear they're sick.
Oh, they're in bad shape. I'm really sorry. They had been sick a couple months back, and they seem to have picked up some kind of buzz again. Hopefully it won't last more than 24, 48 hours.
I hear you. And Tavon called me. He's sick. So Allende is having to hold down the fort, him and Abdullah, today. I'm glad that they can hold it down. I mean, I love my sisters, but a little balance, it makes it nice.
Well, thank you, brothers, for holding it down.
Great. So are you sitting in with us, or do you just have, is there something particular you want us to know, or me to know?
No, I'm just going to sit in for just a couple minutes.
Oh, please do. Good. Okay. Abdullah, I'll get back to you. I'm glad you, did you go through everything, Abdullah?
I'm actually reading, one of the links that you gave me to figure out what, adjustable rate mortgage is. I just have one question. Is, Fannie and Freddie Mac, do they give out loans for people to buy houses, right? Is that their deal?
Yes. They're quasi-private, quasi-governmental agencies, and you're gonna need to get to know, you know, Aunt Fanny and Uncle Freddie. All right. So keep doing that. Keep working on that. I think that'll be a great addition. You can use. You know, the rest, you know, continue to use the class to really get into those, answering those questions, because I look forward to you bringing some of those things out in our next class. But just check back in about another 15-20 minutes, okay? All right. Mama Amani Reynas, what he's doing is, we asked he and Kamal and Sakili to write the 4-page paper on the economy, and I went through his and gave him some other suggestions to go deeper there, and I'm working through Sakili's right now, so that's what he's working on. Now, what we're talking about here is this, how depression is good news for a lender in this class called the Economic Conundrum. And so last class, yes, Allende, last class or class before, Nima had said that her house that she had to buy for another class was $250,000, and if there's a 25% drop in housing values, as it was during the depression of the 1930s, then her house would be worth $187,000. And how much did you say you would still owe on that house, Nima?
I would still owe the full amount.
Mm-hmm. Now, what happens, do y'all think, when people's housing values plummet? That is, when what they owe is a lot more than the house is worth.
That's called being underwater, right?
Yes, it is called being underwater. Some people call it drowning. The newspapers call it being underwater. For those people who are actually in it, we call it drowning. So, what happens when your people are underwater? If you don't know, guess.
They can't make their payments on time, and they end up having to deal with foreclosure.
Could be. If they lost their jobs, they couldn't make their payments on time. Let's use Sakili, have you identified your house yet, or you haven't? I know you weren't here when they started that, so I don't know whether you've got into that groove yet. In the Mama Fia's class, do you have a house yet?
No, I don't think we're going to be doing that. We went over like how to do mortgage and stuff, but I didn't come in time for the housing project.
No problem. So then I want you to be an advisor to Nima, because Nima got a $250,000 property, and her the housing value has dropped 50%. So how much does she owe on her? How much is her house worth now, Sakili, if it dropped 50%?
$250,000.
Okay, hold on. You want an easy way to do it?
Yes.
What's half of 25? Half of a quarter. Half of 25 cents. All right, so now what you do is just put your zeros back.
Put the zeros back, you can add zeros to 12.5?
Mm-hmm.
125,000?
Very good. That's what a house is worth. And she has to make, I'm the banker, I'm the lender, and she has to make payments to me. And she still has a good job, so she can afford to. That is, she has the money. Would you advise her to keep paying me $250,000 for a house that's valued at $125,000? So, if she takes your advice, then she may do what people are doing today called strategic default. They're walking away. They're saying it's not a good business decision. Other people are fighting, taking the banks to court, and other people are doing other things. But many people, especially rich people, are walking away from their homes since they're underwater significantly. In something, just write it down, called strategic default. That's current. That's not, they didn't call it strategic default necessarily during Lincoln's time. But we just want to make the point. Because the key is for you to understand, how is it that a depression is good for lenders? Okay? I don't want you to just have the words. I want you to at least have a concrete example so that you can know at least one example of how a depression is good for lenders. So if, Nima, you took your advisor's advice to walk away from your house, how would that benefit the lender? Nima, you with me? Hello, am I still coming through?
I can still hear you. Yes, I could. There was some noise in the background. Could you repeat?
Okay. Your house is now worth $125,000. You owe $250,000 on it. Your advisor Sakili Tafiti suggested that you employ a strategy called strategic default, which essentially means you walk away from your mortgage, give the house back to the bank. Now, how will the bank benefit?
How will the bank benefit?
Yep. Mm-hmm. What did you secure your... Who's that? Who else? Okay, great. Back. Sakili, how do you think the bank would benefit?
I don't see how they would get benefited either. Oh, wait. Would they be able to take the value of what's left of their of her house?
Bingo. They get a house. She can't walk, stop paying and stay in the house, so she goes, walks away from the house. And they get a house. You know, let's say she put $20,000 down on the house. They got a 20. Let's say she made payments for a year. She got the payments. And they got a house.
So
you see,
the bank win either way, because if she leaves, if she keeps paying them, they still get money. But if she leaves, they still get money because they get the house.
That's right. That's how it's set up, particularly with mortgages. And the longer the mortgages, the more they win. But anyway, you just need to know how, when this statement says that you're reading, how people end up getting houses for pennies on the dollar. And usually, the richer people in the country usually get it, okay? Well, yeah, we're going to actually introduce you to some ways that some creative things that Africans are doing here in Atlanta in a minute, because you also had two other pieces to read. All right. So now you understand, at least you got an example, one example of how depression helps lenders. Okay, we're going to keep moving through that theme in different times over the classes so that you understand, because you are right now understand that the lenders in 1832 created the Depression, and at least now by 1861, the lenders are practicing the fractional reserve system with state chartered banks, since the big charter, second bank is no longer chartered. Let's keep going with Allende now. Allende, Otto von Bismarck. What has he got to do with the Civil War?
Okay, he was the ex-president of Germany, I believe, and Abraham Lincoln, like, he needed some finance money with his war effort, so, like, he went there to, like, try and get the necessary loans, but that didn't go so well, so he ended up hiring his old friend, the colonel.
I still don't get the connection. Maybe I just didn't hear you well. What's the connection? Why is this name mentioned at all? You want to ask for a lifeline?
Yes.
Ask for it then.
Can I get a lifeline?
Very good. It's not clear. Put that as a thing for you to do a little research on, okay? Because they just throw it in, and they don't develop it, okay? It just said he was the Chancellor of Germany at the time, okay? So we're left to guess, but we don't know. So we're going to put a pin in that, all right? Let's go down into the statement, still in that same paragraph. The money changers, wishing the union to fail, offered loans at 24% and 36%. Hmm. So, this is interesting. Who were the money changers, and why did they want the union to fail? Guess if you don't know. It's okay. We're just speculating here. We're just, you know, trying to figure it out.
The money changers were, I'm guessing that they were the lenders who were in charge of the, who were basically the ones that President Lincoln was fighting against.
But why did they want the union effort to fail? Which means the South would be able to successfully succeed, or they succeeded, to actually stay a separate country. You got any guesses why the banksters, you know, and that many of whom lived in the North would want the Union effort to fail? Right, it's not written in here, so this would just be kind of guessing and conjecture. Okay, now we covered some of it in another class called Following Araminta, but I'll just mention it here, and you'll get it more in depth when we go through that class. Who were the people behind the central bank? You remember the central bank, which was called the First Bank. The first, then the second bank. Who were the investors behind that? No. You remember? Jefferson was bent out of shape about something about that second bank. He said something about the investors. Do you remember? Anybody? Were they Americans?
Oh, they said, as you said, that more than 8 million stocks of the bank were held by foreigners.
Mm-hmm. And most of these foreigners, many of the foreigners, were British. And many of the Europeans at the time of the Civil War wanted the South to win, because the South, using African muscle and sweat and blood, produced the raw material that ran the factories. And factories were in two places. Factories were in Britain, and factories were beginning to be developed in the northern states of the United States. So Britain, England, Europe wanted the South to win, supplied the South ships to fight, armor to fight, gave them money and guns, so that the South would win and extend African captivity all the way through to Cuba and into Brazil. That was their wish, because they still wanted cheap raw materials based on our labor, with the which we didn't get paid for, to supply their factories so that they could maintain domination. You get it?
Yeah, you have to get it.
So the same people who were behind the central bank were also the people who supported the southern states winning. Alright, just so you got the connection. I hope this is, you know, you're making connections. This class is really all about making connections, okay? And understanding pieces and making connections. Please keep notes and ask questions, Because you're going to be measured here, not in how many little assignments that you do, but how you make connections and understand this flow of money, this struggle of money that goes on in white America, and also begin to understand its impact with us, okay, and on us. All right. Nima, you had a question. I had a question to you. What's your answer?
I thought the question I gave me was the Otto von Bismarck one. That's why I was kind of confused.
Oh, I thought I gave that to him, to Allende.
Yeah, I thought you gave that to me.
Yeah, I gave Otto von Bismarck to Allende. What I gave to you was the... was the connection between war and debt. I don't remember exactly what it is right now, but that's okay. We're gonna move on right now, just so that you know how we're gonna end this section to go to another one. All of the things that you said were right on the money. Plus, make sure that you understand the fractional reserve banking, Sakili. Make sure you got that. Did you get it, Sakili, understanding what he means, the fractional reserve banking move like a virus? Okay. And Sakili, why is that unstable? Why is fractional reserve banking unstable? I can't hear you, sister. I hear you faintly, like you're really far away. Is it just on me? Can others hear Sakili?
Sorry, I had my mic far away.
Okay, great. I got you now.
Okay, so can everybody hear me?
Yes, we can.
Is it unstable because, okay, so I was right about the gold bar thing, gold.
No, it does not matter whether it's gold or not gold. That's not the key issue. The key issue is, okay, go ahead.
Sorry. I meant like the real substance that you have is like how much real substance you have and how much real substance you don't have. And depending on how much real substance you have, how much fake stuff you're allowed to make.
Okay, well, and remember we said, what's the rate at which the fractional reserves could operate?
Wasn't it 1 to something like 20 or, yeah, 20?
Okay, conservatively it's 1 to 9, it may be much greater than that. Welcome back, Abdullah. So why is it unstable to have fractional reserve banking at high at that level of leverage?
Because you're making up money that you don't have.
Why is that unstable? Bingo. Very good. So make sure that you understand that. Make sure that you understand, and in this case, that it moved from the central to the state chartered banks. Okay. Make sure you understand that depression is good news for the lender, and war causes even more debt and dependency. How is that? How does war cause debt? Very good. As simple as that. You know, you need money to finance a war. We're going to check out Otto von Bismarck a little bit later on. Also make sure that you understand that the money changers, okay, people in charge of the money, many of which were loyal to Britain and or had were representing British investors, okay, wanted the union to fail, okay, and it was Colonel Dick Taylor that said, you know, you're going to make our own currency, not based on the money from the fractional reserve system, either state or federal. And I do like that you also remember the actual quote. Where is the quote that, Nima, that you were referring to that talks of where the bank saw that the state issuing its own currency, debt-free, was dangerous? What quote is that? You mean Andrew Jackson, 1828, 1936, the fourth line, it is not on citizens?
Yes.
Okay, now we covered that one before. I thought you were talking about another quote where the banks, because that's a quote from Andrew Jackson. I thought you were talking about a quote from London where the banksters was talking about the dangers. I'm talking about where the banksters are. Is there a place, this is anybody, where the banksters are indicate that they're afraid of the national currency? Not
oh,
the.
Yeah.
Go ahead. All right, can anybody help her out?
Oh, I found it. It's underneath the, it's in a paragraph that starts Abraham Lincoln and has a small T next to it. It's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's like the sixth paragraph, and towards the middle of it was.
Okay, read it out loud. Keep going. Read the whole section.
They wasted no time expressing their view in the London Times. Oddly enough, while the article seems to have been designed to discourage this creative financial policy, it's put down, we are clearly able to see the policy's goodness. If this mischievous financial policy, which has its origin in North America, shall become indurated down to a fixture, then that government will pay off debt and be without debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It will become prosperous without precedent in the history of the world. The brains and wealth of all countries will go to North America. That country must be destroyed or will destroy every monarchy on the globe.
Alright, so let's talk about that. Allende, do you understand that? What they're talking about? I don't understand, sort of. If you don't understand it, any part you don't, just ask the question. Then ask the question. What part of it don't you understand? Come again, please. I'm not hearing you clearly. I can hear you, but just a little fuzzy up. Just repeat your question again. All right. So Keely, what's your question? Or do you understand this?
I understand this.
Why do you think they say such a thing? Like, why do you think, as they say, the brains, the wealth of all countries will go to North America? Okay, that's good. Yes, I think it's true. That people will be able to keep more of their money. When you borrow money, you can't keep as much, correct?
Right.
Because you have to pay it back plus what?
Interest.
Very good. So if it's 10% interest, that's 10% less that you get to keep. If it's 20% interest, 20% less that you get to keep. Okay? All right. Great. Allende, what you got?
Okay, I'm not like understanding like the argument that in this occasion is just listed this financial policy which has its origin in North America shall become loaded down.
We got the quote. What's your question?
I don't really, I'm not even like really don't have my ear around. I'm not really understanding that.
Who said it? Whose quote is it? Who's saying it? Who are the people who are calling it a mischievous financial policy? Come on, son. You got to stay with it. Now, this is when I ask you to read stuff and take notes. If you're not clear about things, then those are the questions you want to come. You're not just reading it so that you can say you read it. You're reading it for understanding. Okay? All right. So, who's speaking when they say if? Where's this quote coming from, Allende?
I don't remember.
Well, read the section. Read it to yourself. Yeah, don't read it out loud. Just read it to yourself, and you can come back with it. Now I want to draw some correlations. You remember when we talked about Aya currency or Aya dollars? Suppose, do you think this might also be true if we're talking about our own debt-free African dollars?
Which part might be true?
Oh, the whole thing. This mischievous financial policy, it would be mischievous from whose perspective? Those who want to control us, right? Very good. All right. Which has its origins in Africans in America. If it shall have become endurated, you can guess what that means, down to a fixture. That means it should endure so that it's a fixture, it's a permanent part, okay, of our doing of our economy and the black community and the United States. It can be more, but let's just focus it on the United States. Then that government, that is this sub-government of black people, will furnish its own money without cost. It will pay off debts and be without debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It will become prosperous without precedent in the history of the world. And the brains and the wealth of all countries will come to the Africans. That, my dear and sons and daughters, is the power of us having and using our own currency. It's the same power that folks understood when the colonists wanted to create and use their own currency debt free. Y'all with me on that? So you're using and understanding history and how people are talking about currency and the importance of it for us to continue to understand the importance and the power of us maintaining our own currency. Okay? And it was just as wild an idea then as to many of us black people today if we think of having our own currency. Those people who've been tied to Britain for years as colonists, you know, were afraid to have their own currency. Didn't think it could happen. Didn't trust each other. And when they tried to have their own currency, others threw the nation into a depression. So folks would have to do without their basketball, or at least have to play with an old one for several years. Couldn't have the latest iPod because other folks jacked it up. And, you know, we had to do what we had to do to build our own currency. I hope y'all are getting the connection here. All right. So, please also note there's a connection in terms of not only the assassination of Lincoln, but of starting and maintaining the Civil War was not just about Africans and freeing Africans. Lincoln didn't care anything about African people. He was not a friend of African people, okay, by any stretch of the imagination. We'll get to that in a minute, all right? And I'm not suggesting that any folks did this. This whole issue was about African people at all. For all of these people, we were still property, okay? All right. Now, what did you get from the section Return of the Gold Standard, 1866 to 1881? Anybody?
Well, I learned that the banks threw the country into a depression again so that they would think that the gold standard would be safer. And yes, I found it.
All right. Mm-hmm. And why would the banks want them to adopt the gold standard? Anybody?
Oh, because gold was scarce and they could hold a monopoly over it.
Mm-hmm. So again, the key value, is it actual gold? What's the key value? Scarcity and control. Scarcity and control. Okay. All right. All right, Abdullah, I want you to stay here with us this time. Wherever you've gotten so far on your paper, that's good. We are going down the ZAT article. And anything you want to add to the return to the gold standard? Nima, do you want to add anything to Sakili's observations? Abdullah, you want to add anything? Key things that you got out of the return to the gold standard, 1866 to 1881?
Lincoln's idea would have probably been permanent, their own money system, and
Mm-hmm. So who is this Ernest guy? This Ernest said. Thank you. Who is Ernest Said?
Didn't he have silver outlawed or like banned so that nobody could use it as currency?
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, remember, don't forget the Wizard of Oz. And don't forget the silver slippers. Okay?
I didn't see the Secret of Oz yet. I only saw a very little bit of the beginning.
All right, no problem. You still can watch it, you know. Hold on just a second, folks. Y'all discuss this. I'm about to step away just for a second. But I want y'all to find that section where Ernest Said and what he's doing, and also note who he represents. Be right back.
Yes, Nima, could you post me the link to that article? Because I can't find mine.
That one?
The one that we're working on right now.
Okay, thanks, sister.
Thank you.
Okay, I found the name. I'm trying to read what his or her part in it was.
I think I found it. I'm at the part where it says Ernest drafted the legislation himself. But not sure what legislation they're talking about.
I'm at the part where it says Ernest Said, or as explained by Senator Dingell of Virginia.
Okay, I see where you are.
It says Ernest Said was sent to this country with this fund as agent for foreign bondholders to effect the same object, the demonetization of silver. And the question was, who was Ernest Said, right?
Yes.
So, I think Ernest Said was the one who bribed Congress into making silver a form of currency.
Yeah, I see that.
And he passed the Coinage Act, which basically made coins a currency.
He's not outlawing silver. He was getting rid of silver because he made it so that no more silver coins were meant, and so the only gold coins were the only form of coin money.
Right. It seems like he came for the same object, was the demonetization of silver.
I'm sorry. Keep going.
Okay, so by 1873, gold coins were the only form of coin money.
Yes, so I guess he was supporting making gold the main currency, the gold standard again, and he was getting rid of silver because it was in abundance.
Okay, I just don't want y'all to overstate the case, okay? That is, don't attribute to him what he didn't do, attribute to him what he did do, okay? That is, he may have influenced folks, okay? So if he influenced people, then you say that. Please don't say he passed something if he wasn't in a position to pass it, okay? If he paid folks off and bribed them, then say that, okay? You got to be specific about what he did, and don't just say he outlawed silver, because he didn't outlaw silver. He didn't have the power to outlaw silver. But he was able to make that happen by doing what?
Bribing Congress.
That's right. So say that. He bribed Congress to demonetize silver. Okay? And what does demonetize mean? All right, very good. All right, and what was the result? Well, first, who was he representing?
England? Yeah, England.
You say that like you're not sure.
No, I'm sure. I'm pretty sure England, because it said England was scheming in the back of the banker and he was sent as representative or something.
It said here, clearly. Go ahead, Nima. All right, and by 73, the gold coins were the only form of coin money, okay? Go down a couple of paragraphs. Within 3 years, with 30% of the workforce unemployed, the American people began to hearken back to the days of silverback money and the greenbacks. So part again, what I want y'all to be able to know is the struggle, the tension between, you know, around money and around the currency. Okay, so you begin to see, you know, folks say, well, maybe we really ought to, you know, bring silver and we ought to have those greenbacks. And so they set up another commission to study the problem and responded with. And what did they say? Somebody read that. Abdullah, read that, what they said, this U.S. Silver Commission said.
The U.S. Silver Commission was set up to study this problem and responded with telling history. The disaster of the Dark Ages was caused by decreasing money and falling prices. Without money, civilization could not have had a beginning, and with a diminishing supply, it must languish, and unless relieved, finally perish. At the Christian era of the metallic money of the Roman Empire, amounted to 1,800 million. By the end of the 15th century, it had shrunk to less than 200 million. History records no other such. History records no other such disastrous transition as that from the Roman Empire to the Dark Ages.
Excuse me, I can't really hear that well. I keep hearing stuff in the background.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's cool. Was that a that's no problem. We'll take care of that. That wasn't on my end, was it? Really? Oh, okay. I'll fix that in the future. I'll mute it. I apologize. Okay. So you know clearly. You know, folks are struggling with, and so sometimes for the first time you'll begin to see the somebody referring to the transition from the Roman Empire to the Dark Ages having something to do with the currency. Okay, just kind of put a bookmark in that. So let's read a little further. The U.S. United States Civil Commission, while they obviously could see the problems being caused by the restricted money supply, this declaration did little to help the problem, and in 1877, riots broke out all over the country. The bank's response was to do nothing except to campaign against the idea that greenbacks should be reissued. The American Bankers Association Secretary James Buell, or Buell, I don't have to pronounce that, I have to look that up, expressed the bankers' attitudes well in a letter to fellow members of the association. He wrote, Sakili, would you read this, what he wrote, please?
It is advisable to do all in your power to sustain such prominent daily and weekly newspapers, especially the agriculture and religious press, as will oppose the greenback issue of paper money, and that you will also withhold patronage from all applicants who are not willing to oppose the government issue of money. To repeal the act creating banknotes or to restore to circulation the government issue of money will be to provide the people with money and will therefore seriously affect our individual profits as bankers and lenders. See your congressman at once and engage him to support our interests that we may control legislation.
Very good. So, do you think the press was free?
Nope.
Do you think the press today is free?
Nope.
No.
CNN?
Nope.
ESPN?
Nope.
Fox News? Okay, and the moneyed interest will support those papers. In fact, the five, all of the papers in the country, the majority papers in all the cities are controlled by five families. So what I'm reading in the Atlanta Constitution will be what you're reading in the Charlotte News. Okay. And that news is controlled by those who have lots and lots of money and will espouse those views, just as the agriculture and religious press that support the banksters. All right. So remember the name of James Buell from the American Bankers Association in between 1877 and 1881. James Buell, American Bankers Association. What this statement exposes is the difference in mentality between your average person and a banker. With a banker, less really is more, and every need is an opportunity to exploit. James Garfield became president in 1881 with a firm grasp of where the problem lay. Whosoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. Now, this is another president for you to just store in your hat. His name is James Garfield, and he a white man who came to be president of White Folks United States in 1881. And when you realize that the entire system is very easily controlled one way or another by a few powerful men at the top, you will not have to be told how many periods of inflation and how periods of inflation and depression originate. And Garfield, within weeks of this statement, was what?
Assassinated.
All right. Alrighty, we're going to switch. We only have six more minutes, so your homework is to finish this section before you would go to Free Silver. So we'll do Free Silver, J.P. Morgan, crash of 1907, and Lincoln Watches, and the last section. Where there's war, there's money. Okay. Now, make sure in your notes this time that you are able to look up pieces that you don't quite understand, so that you know, you really begin to see a flow from that. So, Allende, on the same page, you're dealing with section Free Silver, J.P. Morgan and the Crash of 1907, Lincoln Watches, and Where There's Money, There's War. Now, less than the last 5 minutes, get some things from any takeaways or questions from the other two articles that you were asked to read. One was about Mama Afia's and my fighting and suing banks. One of them, ironically named J.P. Morgan Chase. And the other is about the formation of a movement called Justice at Home. Questions or any takeaways?
I have one question. What exactly does pro se mean?
Pro se means you're representing yourself. In this case, it's not the same thing as defending yourself. It's representing yourself, whether that's defense or offense. In our case, are we defense or offense?
Defense.
Did we sue them or did they sue us? That's right. We're the plaintiffs. The plaintiff is the person who's suing them. We're suing them. Sakili, go ahead.
Wouldn't it be defense because you're responding to something that happened?
Well, if I get in the ring, you know, with the formidable opponent, I might hit first, but doesn't mean that person's not going to hit back. I might start the fight. That's offense. Within the context of the battle, I'll go between offense and defense. But I'm driving the action. Okay?
Okay, I get it now.
You get it? So, we are suing them. Now, let me tell you how important that is. In Florida, they were suing someone, trying to foreclose on them, and that person was able to marshal some evidence and some laws and were kicking their butt. And so they just withdrew the suit. They just said, forget it, we're going to drop the suit. They can't do that with us. Why? That's right. They can't just dismiss the suit. See, I can, let's say, if I say, all right, I'm bringing a claim against Nima, okay? Nima is a terrible student. She doesn't do her work, and I'm bringing that claim. And let's say I'm going to the court of Anissa Smith. And about, you know, midway through my presentation, I see that Nima Smith has a formidable defense against my claim. I can just say, you know what, I made a mistake, just forget that, Mama Nisa, I confused her with somebody else, I drop all claims against Nima. I can do that because I brought those claims. But they can't do that with us. They can't drop out when they're getting beat. Why? Because we bring it with our suit, okay? Now, they can win, or, you know, they can try to win, you know. And they won one round. We won a round. They won a round. But it's ours to appeal at this point. And they can't just drop it. That's the advantage for us of being the plaintiff, being the person that took the offense, okay? We said what they were doing is wrong, and we sued them, as opposed to reacting to them suing us. All right, any other takeaways or questions?
I don't have any.
So what do you think? You think it's a good thing? Do you think it's a good fight?
My thing is, if they're all, does the judge or the jury or whoever's judging this, are you guys still fighting, right? Are you guys still fighting like as of now?
Yeah. What did the paper say? Yeah, very much so. That was February 11th is when that was published.
Okay, so my thing is, like, why hasn't it already just been, like, you know, finalized? You guys, your side won, because after reading this, it doesn't really seem like they have anything to back their point up.
They don't. But in America, being right doesn't mean you win. You do know that, right?
Yes.
We're right. And we ought to fight to win. And they have an army of lawyers. They've already changed legal companies 3 times. Because every time, you know, they respond, we throw something back. And they had to move it around to a better company and better company and a better company. And when we respond this time, you know, at the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals is where we are now. They had the judges in their pockets. The judges ignored everything that we said and ruled in their favor on this round. In the state, we won that round. That's why they moved it to federal, to run away from the state judge and the victory that we won there. They won the first round in the federal. Federal has 3 rounds, district court level. The next court is the Court of Appeals. After the Court of Appeals, what's left? What's left?
I don't know.
Okay. Have you ever heard of the Supreme Court of the United States? We're one step from it.
So, hey, could it be possible that you guys might actually, like, I don't know, this actually might get released into some kind of press or something if you guys go to the Supreme Court?
It very well may get released into some kind of press. And if, just as if the religious press, just as the religious press and the other press here, okay, now how much you know about it won't be based on how far it goes or how important it is. It'll get be based on who controls the press. Right? You just read that the bank says, let's withhold money from certain press, let's give money to others who will tell certain stories. So already, you know, we're at the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals with our case against the biggest banks in the world. Your instructors, that's where we are. Okay? If nobody else tells anybody, you ought to tell somebody. You ought to appreciate that. Because you got to be the newspaper, both your mouth and your writing. And others may pick it up. Others will. Some others have. How, whether it ends up on CBS or CNN, you know, I don't know. And I really don't care. What I really care is that we win the battle. Secondarily, you know, it can be in the press, in the wider press. But we know it's not a free press. That's what a point I want you to understand. But just so that you understand, we are one step away from the Supreme Court. We think we're going to whoop their butt on this one, at this round, just like we did on the state round. Okay? Not a chance. And here's why. Just as I'm fighting, you're going to have to fight. And we're not fighting for our house. We're fighting for our community. We're fighting for our people. There's been, my estimation, nearly $400 billion of wealth transferred from our community to the white community based on this economic crisis. And it has to be stopped. So we're starting a movement of pro se litigants. Pro se, that is homeowners who are representing themselves in court without lawyers and without the legislature in this state. And that's going to pick up more and more around the country. Anyway, I've kept you 5 minutes over time. I'm hoping you see connections. What I want you to do here, I'll keep homework light, but I want you to go back through this section. Everything on this page, I want you to understand. Come with questions. Allende, I don't, you know, I want you to go through and make sure you understand or come with questions to understand each section that we've talked about today and that we're going to talk about. I also want to make sure that, because we're going to get deeper into the papers that you read from us, all right, your first reading may be here is a struggle. But then when I ask you what a certain thing is, when I ask you who are the banks that we're fighting, I expect for you to know their names. You know, I expect for you to understand those. When I say, what is justice at home? What's a litigant? Then I expect for you to know. Look it up or come prepared to ask questions. Okay? Also, make any changes. Abdullah, I will also give you feedback. Sakili and Anima, I'm working on yours now, Sakili, on your four-page article. You will need to modify that and make some changes. I'll have your changes done tonight, Nima, so tomorrow you have those, so you can make those changes on the weekend. All right? With that, folks, I want y'all to have a good rest of the day. I've enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed this class. If you learn anything that you think is worthwhile. So any appreciations to yourself, about for yourself, your classmates, or for anything you learned? Let's hear it and close out.
about the how President Lincoln's relation to the Civil War and what his motives were, what his real motives were having to do with the economic situation.
I appreciate my classmates for participating today in the discussion. I appreciate Bobo Chesta for teaching us today.
I appreciate all of my classmates who are here and not here, and I appreciate Bobo Chesta for teaching the class and making sure we all understood.
All right, thank you. I appreciate all of you. I have one regret, Sakili, and that is you didn't record the class for your brothers. So I'll have to get you a copy of this recording because I want them to follow the last two classes so they can get caught up. Okay? Please also share with them what the homework is.
Okay, I will.
Let them know at Aya when you're sick. It means that means when you come back, you have to. You're sick doesn't mean you don't do the homework. It just means you do it when you get well. Okay? All right. Take care. Y'all have a good day.